This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuheib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
So Kenya did vote in its national elections on Tuesday, and so since that time, everyone has been waiting for the Electoral Commission, known as the IEBC, the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission, to release the final results. So right now, Friday night, we are still waiting to hear the results.
That's VOA's Jill Craig report from Nairobi. Details coming up.
Also, 36 people are dead so far in a train collision in Alexandria, Egypt, and an assassination attempt by al-Shabaab on General Hussein Hassan Osman, the commander of Somalia's custodial corps, has failed.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, Kenya's Electoral Commission is about to announce the presidential election results. The announcement has been expected for much of the day, but there have been many delays in certifying the final tally. The Associated Press quotes Kenyan opposition official James Orengo as calling the election process a charade and a disaster. He says the opposition will be going to court to challenge the results, which are expected to show that incumbent President Uhuru Kenyatta has defeated challenger Raila Odinga. The Elections Commission has rejected opposition claims that its database had been hacked and the results manipulated to favor Kenyatta. The commission admits there was a hacking attempt, but that it failed. Kenyatta has not commented on the opposition allegations. Commission Chairman Ezra Chiloba had pleaded for patience earlier in the day as the announcement of the results were repeatedly delayed.
Two trains collided head-on today in Alexandria, Egypt, killing at least 36 people and injuring around 100 others. Officials say the death toll could rise. The Associated Press says the collision occurred in the western suburb of Khorishid. The cause of the collision has not been reported. Officials say one of the trains was traveling from Cairo, while the other departed from Port Said on the Suez Canal.
Al-Shabaab has claimed responsibility for today's final or failed assassination attempt of the commander of Somalia's custodial corps, General Hussein Hassan Osman. Security forces say the suicide bomb attack occurred inside Mogadishu's central prison. Witnesses say a man ran after the commander as he was walking to a mosque inside the prison. A security guard intercepted the suspect, forcing the attacker to detonate the explosives. The soldier and the attacker were killed and three other people were wounded. Three people have been arrested.
UN experts have released a new assessment on the strength and capabilities of major extremist groups. The Associated Press reports that experts believe the Islamic State group is still able to send money to supporters and motivate attacks in Europe and elsewhere. They told the UN Security Council that the core of the Islamic State group is adapting to military pressure in Iraq and Syria by transferring decision-making to local commanders. The group is also using communications that are encrypted and more difficult to decode. ISIS also is reportedly developing the ability to use large armed drones. As for Al-Qaeda, the UN experts say it remains resilient, especially in West Africa, East Africa, and the Arabian Peninsula.
Italy is investigating an Eritrean priest and human rights activist for allegedly alerting NGO rescue ships about migrant vessels trying to reach Europe. That violates Italy's new code of conduct that prohibits NGOs from receiving such information on the grounds that it actually helps people smugglers. In a statement on his website, Don Mosi Zarai strongly asserts his innocence of participating in illegal immigration. Reporter Josephine McKenna updates us on this story, as well as other developments regarding migrant issues.
Father Mossi Zorai, better known as a candidate for the Nobel Peace Prize in 2015, has been charged with facilitating illegal immigration by a Sicilian prosecutor. Now, Zorai is the founder of an organization called Habeshia, which is described as a life jacket for migrants. And he's been involved in trying to support migrants and the organizations who are rescuing them in the Mediterranean. Now, he has reacted very strongly to these allegations. He says he's always acted with legality and he's the victim of a witch hunt. He says he has nothing to hide and he's always acted within the law. As a priest, he's been involved in sending SOS signals to ships. Zorai says that he's always acted appropriately. He has sent SOS signals to ships, but only through the correct channels. And he's worked very closely with UNHCR and Doctors Without Borders and other organizations.
Does he have a lot of support from that aspect, from the humanitarian organizations?
Well, it seems that he has a very high reputation, a strong reputation among these organizations. He said he's also had a good relationship with the Italian Coast Guard and the Maltese operational command that's involved in rescues in the Mediterranean. He insists that he has never had direct contact with the Jugendrettet. That's the German ship that has been identified and accused of having direct communication with people smugglers from Libya by the Sicilian prosecutors. So he says he's never been part of that and that he's always operated within the law.
In another development, it looks like the Italian Navy is helping to repair some of the Libyan Coast Guard ships as part of the migrant agreement. Can you give us some more information on this?
As we know, the Italian government has been working closely with Libya, offering support to the Libyan Coast Guard, and now an Italian naval vessel called Tremiti has begun maintenance work on Libyan Coast Guard ships as part of this deal between the two countries aimed at stopping the flow of migrants from Libya to Europe. Italy is providing technical and logistical assistance to Libya, and the EU is also providing training and funding for the Coast Guard in Libya because it's become such a central point, this common departure point for thousands of migrants coming from other parts of Africa, moving their way through Libya and crossing the Mediterranean into Europe.
Also, it looks like some new figures have come out that are showing a decline in the number of migrants entering Italy.
We're seeing a very significant fall. The number of migrants who reached Italy by sea was 11,500 in July 2017, according to UNHCR, and that's down from nearly double that in June. We had around 23,500 arrivals in June. So that's quite a significant drop. And it's also about half the number that arrived in Italy in July 2016. So that's a major breakthrough for the Italian government in particular, as we know, adopting a very hard line and doing everything possible to support Libya and blocking these migrant journeys across the Mediterranean. And that's also having an impact in Italy. Poll released today shows that 46% of Italians appreciate the operations carried out by the Interior Ministry, by the Minister Marco Minniti, in stopping these migrants and creating a very different scenario for Italy, which is still struggling to deal with the number of migrants that we've seen in the last few months.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna speaking to us from Rome.
Amid the political turmoil and conflict in Libya, the UN says more than 500,000 children there need humanitarian assistance. UNICEF says migrant children in Libya are especially at risk of abuse and exploitation. VOA's Jody Capua reports.
The Libyan crisis is now 6 years old, and there's no sign the fighting, displacement, and economic problems will end anytime soon. Following the fall of Muammar Gaddafi, rival governments and officials have been vying for power. What's more, Libya is now the main departure point for thousands of sub-Saharan migrants hoping to cross the Mediterranean Sea to Europe. UNICEF, the UN Children's Fund, says kids have been hard hit by the crisis. Geert Capillary is the agency's regional director for the Middle East North Africa region.
In Libya, we estimate today a third of the population is under the age of 18. 2 million children do live in Libya, of which a quarter, 500,000, are estimated by UNICEF to be facing dire humanitarian needs.
He says the crisis has affected children in many ways.
It has definitely affected schooling for children. The access to schools has been hampered, but also definitely has affected the quality of the education children are having. We have important numbers of children, usually in conflict situations, that have been suffering of psychosocial consequences of the conflict. Children that have been separated from their families. In summary, children who have lost, in fact, the opportunity to be a child.
UNICEF reports 315,000 children in Libya need help getting an education, while about 200,000 are in need of safe drinking water. Meanwhile, tens of thousands of sub-Saharan migrants have made their way to Libya, some crossing harsh deserts to get there. The ultimate goal is to get to Europe. Crossing the sea usually requires the help of people smugglers, who often set migrants off in flimsy dinghies. Capillari says migrant children are at risk in Libya.
Migrant children arriving in Libya have been facing very harsh conditions. We see an important number of these children arriving in Libya, separated from their families, being unaccompanied. We know that several hundreds of these children have ended up and are ending up in detention facilities. Detention facilities not at all conducive for a child to be in.
A new Oxfam report on migrants says many told stories of murder, rape, torture, and detention in Libya. For example, a Senegal teenager says he was kept in a cell that was full of dead bodies.
Children are, of course, very much exposed to violence and exploitation by those who are trying to make big money out of the migration crisis. So children who are affected by migration are indeed particularly vulnerable.
Capillari says despite the humanitarian crisis in Libya, 1.3 million children have been vaccinated against polio. He credits the many health workers in Libya who've remained on the job despite attacks against health facilities. UNICEF is appealing for nearly $15 million this year for Libya, but it's more than $6 million short of that amount. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
Nigerian forces have conducted an unauthorized search of the UN's main base in the northeastern city of Maiduguri. The UN humanitarian coordinator for Nigeria, Edward Callan, has expressed grave concern over the incident. He says security forces were at the base for humanitarian workers for about 3 hours, but gave no reason for the unauthorized search. Callan says the incident could be detrimental to the critical work that is being carried out every day to support the most vulnerable in the region. He's called on the Nigerian government to provide clarification. Maiduguri is the capital of Borno State and has been the target of frequent suicide attacks by Boko Haram. You're listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehis Wuhib. 19 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. The wait continues in Kenya for the official final results of today, Tuesday's presidential election. 36 people are dead so far in a train collision in Alexandria, Egypt. An attempted assassination attempt by Al-Shabaab on General Hussein Hassan Osman, the commander of Somalia's custodial corps, has failed. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Fewer South Sudanese refugees are being registered in Uganda. Officials say the number of new arrivals has declined, mainly due to roadblocks by South Sudanese rebel groups, a long and dangerous journey, and the onset of the rainy season that has flooded roads. Reporter Catherine Nambi has more on the story from Kampala.
Although the number of South Sudanese refugees in Uganda is nearing the 1 million mark, the latest statistics at the refugee collection and transit centers, as well as settlements, indicate a reduction in new South Sudan arrivals. Oziti Robert is a registration clerk at Elegu Collection Point at the Uganda-South Sudan border.
From July last year, we have emergency more than 23,000 people here. But in early April, we received 500, 600. But May and June, the number reduced. So from there, now we are receiving 145 persons per day. This is a reduction.
Jenna Tome is a deputy refugee desk officer. She says, at Mvepi Refugee Settlement in Arua District, the number of new arrivals has fallen sharply.
On average, we have been receiving 1,000 to 1,500 per day. But for the last 1 week, the number has reduced to around 300. And the reason being, you know, we heard that there were roadblocks all over. People couldn't access the border points. And these ones we are receiving, if you interview them, they tell you they go a long way and get through border, Congo border, to access Uganda. And in some areas, they say they are not allowed to move.
According to the latest refugee situation report, 3,666 South Sudanese refugees arrived in Uganda between July 26th and August 1st. This indicates an average daily arrival rate of 524 compared to 4,142 in the previous weeks. According to government statistics, Uganda is currently hosting over 990,000 South Sudan refugees. The Uganda government is now seeking a permanent solution to the refugee crisis, given that the situation in South Sudan is still volatile. David Kazungu is the Commissioner for Refugees in the Office of the Prime Minister. He says there is need to address the root cause of the South Sudan refugee crisis before it gets worse.
The numbers continue growing, of course, and we are concerned towards government. And we believe that all regional efforts should come to bear on the region to make sure that there is peace in the region. And we as government, we support that process.
Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni has tried to bring South Sudan's warring parties to the negotiating table, but his attempts have so far not been successful. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
A conference on tackling major health outbreaks has just ended in the Gambia. Delegates stressed the need to equip and train Gambian health personnel to respond to health emergencies. The conference was part of the World Health Organization's Joint External Evaluation Program, known as JEE. It requires member nations to have a response plan to control disease outbreaks. Reporter Pandera Mbai has the story.
Pressing health challenges facing Africa have prompted nations such as the Gambia to tighten its belt in the event of an emergency health outbreak and crisis. In recent years, the continent has been devastated by the deadly Ebola pandemic. The disease has claimed the lives of thousands of people in countries such as Sierra Leone and Liberia. The World Health Organization has developed what it calls the Joint External Evaluation, or GEE, process. Member countries have committed themselves to the program, which includes the prevention and emergency response to health crises. Mrs. Safilo Sise is Gambia's health minister.
The purpose is to prevent, protect against, control, and provide a public health response to the international spread of diseases in ways that are commensurate with and restricted to the public health risk to avoid unnecessary interference with international traffic and trade.
The government of President Adama Barrow has inherited a virtually collapsed health sector from the former administration of Yahya Jammeh. This includes decayed buildings and infrastructure, and a limited number of drugs in health facilities. Health Minister Safilo Sise reminded delegates about the WHO's contingency emergency plans of action in tackling disease outbreaks.
In 2012, the WHO World Health Assembly urged state parties to take necessary steps to prepare and carry out appropriate national implementation plans.
Equipping and training of health professionals is high on the WHO's agenda. Mr. Modu Sise represents the World Health Organization Banjul office.
The JEE allows countries to identify the most urgent needs within their health security system to prioritize opportunities for enhanced preparedness, response, and action, and to engage with current and prospective donors and partners to target resources effectively.
Under the GEE program, countries can request a mission to help them identify emergency needs, including how to monitor and respond to health risks to the public originating at ports, airports, and ground crossings. The WHO also provides guidance, training, and simulation exercises on the ground to enable countries to meet health emergencies. A recent GEE team that visited Uganda assessed laboratory services, biosecurity and biosafety, immunization, workforce development, emergency operation centers, and medical countermeasures. The WHO says the international health regulations represent an agreement to work together for global health security. The GEE project is funded by Finland, Germany, and the United States. Participation in it is voluntary. Gambian health officials said they will critically assess and monitor the country's health situation to prevent a possible outbreak. They will also work to sensitize communities about personal hygiene and proper sanitation as part of their agenda. For VOA Africa, this is Pandirimbai reporting.
And we have an update for you on the Kenyan elections. Kenya's Electoral Commission is presently announcing results of Tuesday's presidential election, county by county. So at this point, we do not yet know the final results of Tuesday's presidential election, which will be announced sometime after our show.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Curtis Bynum, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in, you will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. This weekend, get your Pan-African music swag on right here on The Voice of America. Hear the hottest hits from Soweto, Lagos, Conakry, and Cairo. Discover neo-traditional sounds from Abidjan and Brazza. I've got you covered for music news, too. A brother duo launches their new album in Kenya. Get the full scoop from the artists themselves in Nairobi. If you call an African woman. And from Egypt, superstar Amra Diab's long-awaited CD is here. Don't miss this, superstars. Sunday and the following Saturday at 15 and 2000 UTC. Music Time in Africa is on.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, troubling times in the Democratic Republic of Congo. The United States says it's concerned at the inability of both the DRC government and an opposition coalition to implement a political transition agreement reached last December. A DRC political discussion.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.